Hi, I'm Bruce Maples, publisher of Forward Kentucky. Today we're going to be talking with Jason Bailey of Kentucky Policy about various financial things, including both in D.C. and in Frankfort. But before we do, there's a couple of things I'd like to say. First of all, we haven't been around for a while, but we're back and we're going to be recording regularly and posting things regularly. Secondly, if you believe that we need a strong, progressive media landscape, both in the nation and in Kentucky, then I encourage you to do two things. One, subscribe to this channel, and two, go to forwardky.com and become a free member. That's the best way to support the work we do. We are, as far as I know, the only ongoing progressive website and media outlet in the state of Kentucky, and we need your support. With all of that said, let's get to today's episode. So we're here today with Jason Bailey, the executive director of the Kentucky Center for Economic Policy, otherwise known as Kentucky Policy, in old time known as KCEP. We're glad to have him here. Jason, welcome to the state of Kentucky.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
So I was going to talk to you about the Republicans' ongoing effort to cut the income tax to zero in Frankfort. But of course, as a friend of mine who worked in the Army said, we are now OBE, which means overcome by events. So before we get into what's happening in Frankfort, let's talk about what's happening in D.C. Mm-hmm. Yesterday, when we had a meeting of advocacy groups, there was general despair and depression about the impact of this spending freeze. Do you have any more information on that today? And what can we say it means for Kentucky?
Well, I don't have any more clarification today. Of course, the federal judge at about 5 p.m. yesterday paused the freeze or delayed the freeze at least until Monday, where apparently he's going to make a final ruling, or, you know, which of course will be appealed on the legality of what the administration has done. So it's not going into effect officially this week, although there are still reports of particular programs, people being locked out, and, you know, scattered news about, you know, funding ended or people being unable to, you know, not know if their contracts will continue and so forth and so on. So there's a lot of chaos. There's a lot of confusion. The clarifications have not particularly helped. I mean, there's been contradictory information about things like Medicaid, about things like Section 8 housing, about Head Start, you know, whether they're included in the freeze or not included in the freeze. But, you know, the bottom line is that particularly in a state like Kentucky that has a lot of poverty and lower than typical incomes, the federal money plays a key role in our communities and in our lives. I mean, we posted a list of $22 billion in federal grants that came to Kentucky in 2024, and they just, you know, they run the gamut from support for agriculture and farmers to, you know, programs that, you know, fund our health departments to help protect against the spread of infectious diseases, you know, housing, homelessness related programs, money for you name it. I mean, there's university research in it. There's lots of people. There are a lot of infrastructure projects and energy projects, about 1,100 that we know of that have been funded through the new federal policies, the Infrastructure Act and the Inflation Reduction Act. That I don't know what happens with projects like that and people, actual workers out there working on those things. So there's a lot of chaos and confusion in the short term, but in the more medium term, if this means the actual long term, well, in the short term, the pausing or even longer term ending or curtailing of some of these funding efforts, funding streams, you know, the impact could be potentially quite devastating. Mm-hmm. To often, the most vulnerable Kentuckians, people with disabilities, veterans, students, but really everybody is touched in one way or another by by these services and by the jobs and the Kentuckians who do them.
I was interested, I guess is probably the most banal verb I can think of, to see that all 50 states' Medicaid portals shut down yesterday. And I'm sure if you're a Medicaid commissioner in some state, you're like, well, I guess we stop until we hear otherwise. And there are people with surgeries planned, and there are people who need diabetes medicine, and the list just goes on and on. And then, of course, there's businesses who have contracts that are going to be building bridges or whatever the case may be. And suddenly, I mean, you're talking about a payday for lawyers because they're just going to start suing everybody. I had this contract, whatever. Well, I just wondered if you had any more updates on that. It's a doggone train wreck, which we all know, and I'm hoping they get it sorted out soon. And I hope
Well, and I think,
figures out how to differentiate between, okay, these things the president can stop and these things the president can't stop.
well, and I think, there's a real legal clarification needs to be made about, if you go back to what James Madison and some of the founders said about who has the power of the purse, they were pretty clear that that was the legislative branch. And these appropriations were not ceilings. They were what they wanted to be spent in these certain areas. And so we're probably going to get a definitive, or at least for now, definitive ruling on that. And that has implications more broadly because, of course, this is just the beginning of the process. It's been very clear that the Trump administration would like to cut federal spending permanently for a lot of these programs. This is not just about so-called woke programs or the Green New Deal, which doesn't actually exist, and those sort of things. This is maybe only the beginning of the process, and so we will probably have legal clarity about whether they can do that and how far they can go. But this isn't even if a lot of these programs are continued and can't be frozen, they're still at risk because there's clearly an interest in permanently reducing funding for a lot of these things. And I think one thing, so I guess silver lining in a really terrible situation is that this has helped in unfortunately in a crisis context, but reconnect a lot of people to what their government does, like what that tax money actually goes to. And it's things that everyday folks rely on that keep our water clean, that keep the roads up to date, all the things that we kind of need. So my hope is that the tremendous blowback that they're receiving on this, which seems to be happening, will both mitigate any harm in short term, but maybe lay the groundwork in the future for preventing even more harmful permanent cuts.
Which sort of segues into the original purpose of this interview, which is the attitude toward government that we see coming out of Frankfurt. Real quickly, and most people watching this or listening to this probably already have the facts, but can you do a one paragraph summary of what the Republicans in Frankfurt are doing with our finances?
Yeah, I mean, what they're doing is reducing the largest revenue source, the individual income tax, which has historically been nearly half of the general fund revenue. They're reducing it and they're not replacing it. So at one point we had an income tax that had a top rate of 6%, actually for most almost 100 years. The state Senate will vote in the first week of February to lower that to 3.5%. So you go from 6 to 3.5%, and there's a process in which that's been done, and they have these triggers, and there's all these things that are done in between there. But that's the bottom line, and that won't be implemented fully until 2027. So these things are on a somewhat of a delay, but you can imagine cutting by over 40%, the source of 40% of revenue, will create a problem. And the state budget, it funds education, K-12, it funds Medicaid, which provides health care for 1.4 million Kentuckians, it funds higher education, it funds human services, it funds infrastructure, and those are the big buckets, right? So it's impossible to, but what they're doing is they're taking advantage of a situation where there's been a lot of temporary increases in revenues at the state level because of the federal COVID response, the stimulus money that came out really spurred a really fast recovery from the COVID recession. We also had inflation that was spurred by the pandemic, and that impacted state tax revenues, right? They went up. As you're paying 6% sales tax, something's more expensive than it was 5 years ago. There's more tax revenue being collected. But they're taking advantage of a situation where we have extra revenue for now to make permanent tax cuts that will exist for all time, no matter the economic conditions in the future. And last few years have been very unique. If you look back over the last multiple decades, we haven't had these kind of surpluses in Frankfurt. And it's not just us, it's happening. It happened all over the country. And now that money's drying up and these tax cuts are being implemented and problems are going to emerge.
So I was thinking about our interview this morning, and it seems to me that there are three reasons that the Republicans want to do this. So let me outline these, and I'm going to ask you which ones you think are the most likely. The first one is that they truly believe that cutting the income tax will result in economic improvement for the state. They point to Tennessee, they point to a couple of other states and say, well, they don't have an income tax and they have a bigger economy than we do, and businesses want to come here, and so on and so forth. The second reason is a view of government, which is basically a libertarian sort of view of government about we want government to be as small as possible. We don't believe in all these programs. We want to get rid of all this stuff and cut back to just really a basic government that only does very basic things. And the third reason is our wealthy donors are going to be the ones who benefit the most from this tax cut. And so we want to do it for them, and we don't care about what impact it has on the rest of everybody else. So, out of those three reasons, which ones do you think are more likely?
I think all three are present. I don't know in the first one about this idea that whether it will spur economic growth, how much people actually believe that. I think there are some that do, that sincerely believe that. I think there are others who maybe have doubts. The evidence on that, does not support the claim that lower taxes is going to grow our economy. And it's sort of funny. Like, I mean, one of the things that if you think that's going to happen, all the other states that are so-called competitors, a lot of the red states in the South are also doing it. So why would it be the case that that Kentucky would win out when they're all reducing their taxes? And some of the best, strongest economies among states in the country are states that have actually are going the opposite direction. They're increasing taxes on millionaires, creating more graduated income taxes. And most states still have graduated income taxes, about 30 some still do. So it's not like this is what everybody's doing. So I don't know to what extent that is a real belief, versus a convenient explanation. I think there are definitely ideological libertarians who believe that government should be smaller. I think it's very interesting, though. None of those folks have put out a list of what they want to cut. I'll give Rand Paul credit. At least he presents a budget from time to time, and he slashes everything. But I haven't seen any proposed budget in Frankfurt that shows how we're going to replace $2.2 billion in lost revenue from reducing the income tax in the way that they're proposing. So even those who profess that in the abstract, I'm not sure where they have not identified where they're going to. In fact, there's some bills being moved that are sponsored by some powerful members of the legislature that involve some new spending in this session, including a new veterinary program at Murray State that my understanding is it costs $87 million and that's an ongoing expense to manage that program. So the same folks who are voting for tax cuts also have been spending at pretty high levels, especially when you look at capital projects. Last few years, there's been no pullback in spending, except in K-12 education, they've moderated for sure. But otherwise, not really. But they're making the easy decisions right now. They're saying yes to everybody, saying yes to tax cuts and yes to funding the budget, not cutting it at least. But you can't continue to say yes to all those people. There have to be tough choices made, and it won't be long before that's in front of them.
You didn't address my third point, and that's okay about taking care of our wealthy donors. I have a feeling that that's certainly in the back of people's minds, at least. Your comment about it won't be long, there is some thought that some of the Trump tariffs and some of the other things Trump is proposing are going to cause the economy to shrink rather dramatically. Do you see? I made a point a few years ago when this started about what a bad idea this was, and I got a note from Jason Nemes saying, "Well, we have ways in place to reverse this if we have to. We can, undo it if the money isn't there." Do you really think that they would do that, or would they just tell everybody to tighten their belts and too bad?
Well, the trigger mechanism they created has no mechanism to reverse it automatically
Right.
if things don't work out. They could have done that. They could have built that into it. They chose not to. So to reverse it would require an affirmative vote to raise taxes. I don't hear anybody, or at this point, see a likelihood of that happening from this group. And it would have to admit that it didn't work. And so, I don't. And so then, the question is sort of also then cutting the budget is very hard though too. So again, there are jobs behind that. There are powerful interests behind that, in a lot of cases, and there are real lives behind the cuts to the budget. In a way that's not the case with the tax cuts. I mean, the tax cuts, two-thirds of them go to the top 20% of people. So
Right.
the money is not that significant to the typical family in terms of the tax cut. But it's a lot to the wealthy. So, I don't know what they're going to do, but they've created no way in which they have margin for error, and they have no way in which to back it up, to back it, to reverse it. They have some money. They put some money in the Budget Reserve Trust Fund, but they've already started to spend that down on capital construction projects, and ultimately. There's a lot of money in there, but if you look at it in context of the state budget, it's a few months worth of a whole, you can plug a few months worth of state expenditures with it. You can't rely on it on an ongoing basis. And again, these are permanent tax cuts. These exist for perpetuity.
So, real quickly, our annual general fund budget, not the road budget, our general fund budget is about how much, roughly?
About 16 billion.
Okay. And they are cutting 2 billion
Well,
of income.
each half point is about 700, a little over 700 million for each half
Okay.
point. So if you go back to the 5% and go from 5 to 3.5, which is what they've done, that's 2.2 billion.
Okay. What is your organization doing about this? I realize that all you have is words and information. Other than driving to Frankfurt and going in somebody's office and yelling at them, what are y'all able to do?
I mean, our main role is information. I mean, what you know, we constantly monitor and analyze the situation. We put information out. We testified in Frankfurt on House Bill 1. We respond to requests. We do interviews in the media all the time on it, and I think help inform and create a debate that frankly wouldn't otherwise be there on this issue. And I think that's our primary function and role. We also have, we're involved in coalitions that have in the past advocated around this issue. I think will in the future, particularly next session when you get into creating a new 2-year budget. And the potential that we're not sure if the triggers will be hit this summer, but if they are, the legislature will potentially try to cut the tax again down to 3%. And at that point, they're really getting into the red zone of real dangerous territory about how much they've cut and how quickly they've cut it. I think what they're trying to do through this whole step down process is do it slowly so that people maybe don't notice as much. It's the old boiling the frog analogy. But the cuts are still pretty deep and pretty quick. And, it just costs a lot to make small cuts to the individual income tax. And because of that economic uncertainty that you mentioned, the economy's not as strong, not growing like it was a couple years ago. Unemployment has actually been rising in Kentucky pretty consistently. There are a lot of uncertainties about tariffs, about deportation, what those things mean for inflation and what the crypto boom means for the financial underpinnings of the economy. There's all kinds of questions, and we just live in a chaotic world now where the city of Los Angeles has been on fire. There are more natural disasters and more risks of things like pandemics that cause problems or cause uncertainty in the economy, and that can easily result in economic downturns or weaknesses that affect the tax revenues. All the more reason you don't want to undermine your revenue base when the threat, they just had a special session 2 years ago to appropriate a couple hundred million dollars to even just begin to address the disaster in Eastern Kentucky from the floods. That kind of stuff is going to be more common, and you're going to need resources to address it.
Does it have the cuts or the programs affected been things that you can tell stories about that you can go in and say, this is what they have done to education or health care, or are we still at the point where they're riding the money wave from the last few years, and so there's not really any stories to tell yet?
They're still riding the money wave, and the cuts are being phased in. Income tax cuts are being phased in, so that the revenue hit is not immediate. And there are these extra resources from the stimulus. I mean, we still are dealing, though, with budget cuts that go back to the Great Recession, to 2008. And there are stories to tell about that all the time. We just put out a report, average teacher pay in Kentucky, after you adjust for inflation, is 20% less than it was in 2008. The debacle around getting kids on the bus to and from school in Jefferson County is directly related to the fact the legislature hasn't fully funded the transportation system, even though they're required to by law, their own law, since 2004. So there are already things, there are things from that we can point to, but the real impact of these big tax cuts has not been felt yet. In the budget. And I think, it's likely to be, it's possible there's a revenue shortfall this year. We don't know yet. It won't be huge, but it could be a few hundred million dollars. But the real impact, I think, is probably likely to hit in the next budget cycle, which will be voted on about a year from now.
Same year there's an election.
Same year there's an election, right?
Interesting. Well, there's a rule that I've been watching that applies to lots of things. It says that the crisis takes a long time to develop and then suddenly it moves very fast. And I'm afraid that we may be looking at that with our financial situation as a country and as a state. What can we do as listeners and watchers, other than send money to Kentucky Policy, which is always a good idea? Is there anything else we can do?
Yeah, thanks for mentioning that. Always a good idea. I mean, I think it's important that your legislators, state legislators, know that you're worried about funding for programs and services and that you don't support more tax cuts. That go to the wealthy overwhelmingly, and that's exactly what's being voted on. And it's disappointing to see some of the people vote yes on that who know better and should do better and be leaders in this moment. We can't complain about funding for education or childcare, housing, any of the other myriad needs in our communities, and also vote for tax cuts that go overwhelmingly to the wealthy. That is a contradiction. And so I think letting those lawmakers know who voted yes on House Bill 1 that, that you don't think that was the right decision, is probably a good first step. And then I think getting involved over the next year, I think there will be campaigns that are going to be unfolding about the next budget, about stopping more tax cuts, potentially reversing them. And I think it'll be a great opportunity, an important way to bring us all together on a really important issue. And parallel to that, there's, there's these federal budget debates that are already happening with the funding freeze and are going to continue over the next year as well. These issues about our resources that we raise together through taxes and spend on things that benefit us all are really going to be front and center. And they're an opportunity to unite people, across lines of difference and geography. We all have a shared stake in this, in those things. And the question is just whether, there's going to be more money for millionaires and billionaires, or there's going to be, resources for the rest of us. That's fundamentally what this is about.
Jason Bailey from Kentucky Center for Economic Policy, thank you so much for your time. I am hopeful that at some point we can have you back in to celebrate good economic thought in Frankfurt instead of what we've seen so far. Take
Thanks,
care,
Bruce.
and we are supporting you and wish you the best.
Thank you, Bruce. Thanks for having me.